Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello and welcome back to the Keith Cheggers podcast. Hi, I'm Hannah Norris. I'm your host and I'm here with my delightful co-host, who's also my husband and retired comedian.
Retired comedian, Carl Donnelly.
Yeah.
Now man of leisure.
Yeah. And we're saying retired because we are deep in the coronavirus times.
Oh, I mean, since last episode, we thought we were very laissez-faire about everything. We thought, it'll be fine. Since then, everything is literally shut down.
Yeah.
I feel like this is now some sort of, like, post-apocalypse recording.
Yeah. But thankfully, we're here at episode 21, and I'm on week 26 of my pregnancy, which, if you've been listening, you know this is a podcast about pregnancy, because that's what's happening to us right now. And we are very lucky to have a guest today, because who knows what kind of self-isolation we're going to be in for the next
Let's do it while we can.
Yeah, you might be the last ever guest.
That's really great. I'm honoured.
We're here in Melbourne with a lovely lady who's very funny. She's a performer, comedy actor, all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And her name is Laura Dunneman.
Hello, guys.
Hey.
How's it going? Welcome to my apartment.
Yes, thank you.
I put the fan on.
Yeah, the fan is in the background.
Well ventilated.
Thinking we're sitting in just a very constant windy place.
Mm.
But it is a lovely little fan because it's a warm day. 31 degrees today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've each treated ourselves to some hand sanitizer,
yeah,
haven't we?
Because
we're worth it.
Yeah. I even tapped some on my face like aftershave earlier on just to be safe.
And you're sitting... It's got the same burn as aftershave, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know what? It didn't burn as much as I thought it might. So,
especially as you shaved yesterday.
I shaved my moustache off yesterday.
Oh, did you?
In a sort of, well, if this is the end of the world. I like having a moustache for comedy because, like, it's quite a funny thing to...
But you're retired now.
Yeah, but so... now since I've given up comedy.
And which he came in last night and was like, look, and the moustache was gone. And then on Twitter, like, it seems to be a thing that comedians are doing things to their facial hair right now.
Well, I think comedians tend to just have quite a standard look that they feel comfortable on stage with.
Absolutely.
I think as it's become clear that we're not going to be gigging for, you know, not in a normal sense, for probably a couple of months in clubs and things, and I think we've all just gone, let's just...
So comedians are going to start to look even weirder.
Yeah, definitely.
Just experimenting with their faces.
Yucky.
I'm going to see some interesting trends.
Yeah. Thankfully in self-isolation, we're going to have to see it, but not necessarily interact with them.
Yes.
And Laura's sitting here right now next to an empty Moses basket.
Yeah,
that was hers when she was a baby.
When it's very on trend now to have a wicker Moses basket.
I've been looking.
I've got a few in my watch file on eBay.
Have you?
Oh, I do.
Well, my mum has always said, you know, I'm not waiting for grandchildren. You know, she was very diplomatic about it and never put pressure on us. But then when I told her I was pregnant, all of this stuff came out of the woodwork.
Oh, yeah.
That she's been saving things.
She took you to the secret lockup.
Yeah, she did actually take me out to the shed.
Just pulled back a rug and just unlocked it.
She'd knitted an entire blanket and kept it secret. She'd bought all these things for her grandchildren that she always said, I'm fine if I don't have. And one of them was that she'd kept my bassinet from when I was little.
It is so lovely.
Yeah.
They've done it up. They've oiled it.
Oh, lovely.
And now I have my baby in it. But he's not in it right now.
Empty right now because little Daniel's in the other room with
Big Daniel. Big Daniel, yeah.
How old is little Daniel now?
Little Daniel.
Daniel Shane.
His middle name is Shane, so we've been calling him Daniel Shane as if it's a bogan abbreviated name. And now it's kind
DS?
Of just...
DS? Is anyone calling him DS?
No, we've been calling him D-Shizzle sometimes.
Yeah. Yep, that's good. That makes more sense.
but mainly he's just getting little Daniel Shane.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so ridiculous that it is fast becoming his actual name. Yes. So little Daniel Shane is 6 weeks old as of yesterday morning.
Yes.
Yeah, so he's having his 6 week shots on Friday. So we have to go to the GP.
Yeah.
And
then he's going to cry and it's traumatic.
Apparently. Yeah. But I just, particularly right now with everything that's going on, I just want to get it done.
That's
get him immunised and out of that GP office for a little while. So
yeah, we went to a GP's earlier on. There was a few masks knocking around.
Yeah. I had to wear one for Mike because I've, as we can hear, I have a cold and I've been checking all the symptoms. I have no fever. I have no persistent cough.
It's just a sniffle you got from the plane.
That's the whole thing. Some people can get a cold.
Yeah.
Still going to get colds.
That's the thing, because I had a flu shot last week or the week before.
Yeah.
Just a couple of days before I flew.
Mm.
Then just flying, being on a plane, then coming to a different climate, I just got sick. And I woke up this morning and was a bit sad about it all because I've been so healthy for my whole pregnancy until this point.
Mm.
That being kind of a bit sick, I'm like...
It's getting you down.
Yeah, it's just a bit annoying and shit.
Not the global pandemic getting you down.
No, it's all about me.
No, it's just I've got a sniffle.
Just a sniffle.
My cold.
And it's got the sniffle.
But it means we're here, and it's nice to see little Daniel Shane, but we're not doing any touch, no baby
no,
touching.
No baby touching. And we're in the process at the moment of just sort of figuring out how serious this whole thing is in terms of, who do we let touch him for the next little while.
Yeah.
Because it's not so much that he will get sick, although we don't really know much about babies and this weird virus, but more so can he be a carrier?
And yeah.
So at the moment we're limiting it to just me and Big Dan, who is my husband and baby daddy.
He's quite tall. Has he ever been called Big Dan before in his life, or is just this since being a dad?
No, he's just Big Dan now. Or Daddy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is so weird to... call someone daddy, but you're going to be a daddy.
I'm father.
Father.
I've decided I want to be a posh English father.
Well, my dad, who's also called Shane, that's where we got the middle name from.
Big Shane.
Yeah, Big Shane. Big Daddy Shane. We've been negotiating what his grandpa name would be because my mum decided she was going to be Granny, which sounds really old.
Which he's probably decided for quite a few years.
Yeah.
Yeah,
in the shed.
In the shed. She'd carve it into the block up wall.
Yeah. Granny's shed.
She wants to be Granny. She says that, I know it sounds old, like I'm an old woman, but I'm only ever going to be a granny to that person, so I should just soak it up. But my dad has been adamant that he just wants to be Shane.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's been quite funny because it sounds, when we say, oh, we're going to Granny and Shane's house, it sounds like Dad is her toy boy.
Yeah, it does.
Your grandpa's not around anymore.
Shane's here now. This is her later in life boyfriend.
Yeah, he's 35.
Shane's here now, but he can still cuddle you. So we basically put it on him that he has to come up with a name.
Yeah.
And then he
Have you
refused.
Got any thoughts what you'd like?
Well, I started calling him Grandpappy Shane because I thought if I call him something
Grandmaster Shane?
Grandmaster Shane.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's good. But if I use a really ridiculous name, it'll push him to actually just settle on something.
Yes.
And so last week Dan was away for the whole week, so I went out to Mum and Dad's to stay. So we had this extended long whole week with little baby Daniel Shane and my parents, and so I was like, it'll get sorted then. And he has settled on a name which is horrific. He would like to be called Granddaddy Cool.
Wow.
With the prospect of one day just being referred to as Cool.
Is that with a K? Or a...
I thought if you're going to drop C. one of those words, you'd drop the cool and go with Granddaddy.
And now he is referring to himself as Cool.
That's in Parenthood, isn't it? The film Parenthood.
Yeah.
The guy who plays Mozart in the film Amadeus.
Oh, yeah.
The bad brother. He's got a son called Cool.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think it came more so from there's a famous Australian band from my parents' era called Daddy Cool that he loves.
Granddaddy Cool.
Granddaddy Cool. but a lot of people in the family are refusing to call him that, but it might stick, it might not, I'm not sure. So I've just been calling him Granddaddy, which I think is nice. Cute.
Yeah. Yeah, Granny and Granddaddy's.
Granddaddy's.
Not cute. Granny and Shane's. I have ideas for what my parents' grandparent names will be.
Yeah.
And so my mum is Lala, because that's what her name's Angela, and when she was young, she couldn't say her own name, and she called herself Lala.
That's really cute. That's
nice. So she's Lala. Adorable. But my dad, I've said Eeyore.
And what's his name?
Michael. It's kind of like Eeyore, the Winnie the Pooh character.
Oh, yeah.
He's always had an affiliation with that character.
Yeah. And it's easy to say. You need stuff that's easy. Because, like, dad says he's called Shane. No 2-year-old is going to be able to say Shane. Like, it's not an easy name.
Thane.
It's going to be Thane or something.
But then something funny might come of it that becomes a name. Yeah, true. I suppose.
Yeah.
But they can obviously say the 4 syllables of Granddaddy Cool.
Granddaddy
Cool. Yeah, of course. It's going to be his first word, obviously.
Granddaddy Cool is so bad.
It's really good. Before we came to visit you today, I was remembering that the last time we saw you was in London. We had lunch and we told you that we were going to do IVF. We just started doing IVF.
You were having needles.
I was doing needles, wasn't I?
Yeah, you were having needles.
Oh, that was just post-Edinburgh.
Yes,
I recall now.
And I was really excited.
Yeah, and you were pregnant.
I was like, I think I was maybe like 18 weeks pregnant by that point.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was just, I've been getting really excited for anyone else that's gotten pregnant.
And it was like, you know, that thing of going, is it going to happen? We don't know.
Yeah.
And that chance of it happening first time.
Yeah.
And also, like, I know a few people that are going through IVF, and it was really so nice when I heard that you'd gotten pregnant so quickly, because there's so many people, not so many, but I know several people that have just been doing it for years and have had just a shit house time.
I mean, until I started telling friends about it, like, you know, and we started telling friends, we didn't realise how many friends we've got that have done it and it hasn't worked.
And I was like, it was so nice to hear that it worked for you, because I was like, oh, it can work, because I was starting to think that, like, it just never worked.
Well, I think, if anything, the fact that we hadn't told people and we hadn't had all these stories of people saying, oh, we tried it and it didn't work, I went into it very naive and just, I had very optimistic hopes. I was like, oh, yeah, of course it'll work. It's IVF.
This is
what
fix.
You do. Yeah, and genuinely, well, you know, obviously looking back now, how lucky we are it did work the first time. That I think had I known all those stories of people that it hadn't worked for, I would have been going into it with a very different mindset.
I ran into a friend in Adelaide the other day, and she and her wife are expecting a baby, and I think they're 23 weeks.
Yeah.
And that you said you were going to say...
Did you do IVF? I stopped myself saying it. I was like, well, of course... I gather you might have.
There's been some sort of intervention.
I got asked some really interesting questions when I got pregnant, because I got pregnant and then when I was 6 months pregnant, we got married.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to talk to you about.
We've been together for... like 7 years, but it just coincided, and we planned to get pregnant at that time, and I thought it would take a couple of years to get pregnant, and so that's why I was like, let's just start now, because it's going to take ages anyway. And then it happened first cycle through, and we also planned to get married as well, but everybody thought that it was a whoops baby, we had this wedding that the invitations had been sent out for, and then we announced that we were pregnant. So everyone thought it was a mistake. And a lot of people, like, were trying to kind of ask if it was planned or not. That I was actually really, like, defensive about it, and or maybe more offensive about it, because I wanted to tell people, oh, no, this was a planned pregnancy. Like, almost as if having an unplanned pregnancy is so terrible.
Yeah.
But I felt weird about it. But there was a woman at my work. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah, there was a woman at my work who, she's in a same-sex relationship as well, and she got pregnant at the same time, and she was like, well, I don't have that problem. Like, everyone knows this is very intentional and planned.
Yeah. This hasn't just happened.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's such an archaic way to look at it as well. Like, there is still that mindset in people about marriage and having children.
And the order that you do it in and everything.
Because because it's also that thing of, oh, we've got pregnant, so we'd better get married.
Mm. Yeah.
That was what I was worried people thought, that it was a shotgun wedding.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of, like, jokes about it, like, ha, ha, ha. But it's like, no, we were getting married before I got pregnant, but also the pregnancy was planned. But we planned it in a way where it was like, we'll try for a couple of months because then it would line up with the timing. Because you don't want to be too early in your pregnancy when you get married. No. You don't want to be popping either. So it was, like, a real sweet spot of 6 months. Yeah. So I had a little bump.
Yeah.
It was cute. But I didn't feel horrific anymore.
No, that's interesting. I wanted to ask you about that because it looked like seeing photos and it looked really, you looked really great and it looks really cool to be. And
but if it was like 2 months earlier or 2 months later, it would have been fucked.
Yeah.
Well, 2 months earlier, you might have just been a little bit.
I was spewing every day.
And also, just a look, you sort of, just people a bit be like, fat. Is she?
Just a bit bloated. Yeah. Whereas it was a nice, proper little bump.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, and you were sick, weren't you?
Yeah, I spewed every day.
Yeah, yuck.
Yeah, lots of. For how long? I've never been a vomiter at all.
No.
I had a 20-year vomit streak in my life.
Yeah.
No, never, didn't vomit once in 20 years.
Not once.
Because you didn't like it as well.
That's a record. I've never heard anyone have that.
You avoided, like, you did things to not be sick?
I think so. Like, I've never been a vomiter anyway until I had pregnancy, but I just. Yeah, like if I felt like I was getting a little bit sick, I'd just like double down and like
not go.
Yeah,
there.
And I'm not a massive binge drinker either, so I'd never vomited from drinking too much. And 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. And it's the pregnancy is what changed that.
I had a food poisoning incident a couple of years ago that broke the spell, and it was good because before that I had a phobia of vomiting because it had been so long.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to vomit. Whereas now I am, like, after this pregnancy, I'm such a pro.
I figured like after this podcast, I'm just going to go have a little
whack. Just going to hop off.
Well, we've got a friend with a phobia, chronic phobia of vomiting.
Yeah, well, it's scary. It's a scary event.
She, I forgot to warn her once. She came to watch a show of mine in Edinburgh that had quite a sustained vomiting story. And I'd literally started it and then realised she was in the crowd and had to stop the gig. And say, just so you know, this is going to last about this long. Put your hands over your ears. I'll give you a nod when it's over. And it was like a 10-minute story with like a lot of vomiting.
Well, if it's a phobia, she would be triggered by it,
wouldn't she? Yeah, it makes her feel really sick and, she can't handle it.
Poor thing.
Yeah.
Well, I learned how to vomit really well. So, like, by the end, it finished around probably, what would it have been, at around 5.5 months. Stopped.
So that's just about where I am.
Then I had a couple of voms in the final trimester.
Right.
Few little, you know.
Cheeky little voms.
Cheeky voms. But before that it was like once a day, if not several times a day.
Wow.
Oh, man.
And like, but it was, I became so casual about it. It was just like, I'd be midway through a sentence. Yeah. Oh, hang on, just 1 second. I'd go off.
It wasn't constant nausea then. It would come on in waves.
No, I was nauseated through the entire day.
Wow.
And I had good medication from the doctor.
Yeah.
She gave me medication and then it didn't work. And then I went back to her and I cried. Just if you're ever in doubt with doctors and pregnancy, just cry. Because that's what I found with several instances worked to get what you need. She was like, okay, I'm going to give you the hard stuff.
Qantas today.
Oh, yeah.
Going to be on the phone.
Just cry.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Okay.
The other one I have for you, have you had your gestational diabetes
test yet? No, I have to do it next week.
Okay, a little hint.
Mm-hmm.
The gestational diabetes test, you have to go in. Should I explain what you have to do? So you go in, they take your blood, and they take quite a bit of blood. To start off with, they took 5 vials of blood. So you were sort of a bit depleted anyway. Mm. Then they give you a sugary drink, which is substantial, and it's like 10 lemonades combined into one, and you have to drink it quite quickly. It's the most disgusting thing you ever tasted. And then they make you sit in the waiting room at the doctor's for an hour while you process the sugar. Then you have to have another blood test. Then you have to wait for another hour, then another blood test.
Bloody hell.
And it's really horrible because your body... And you have to fast for 10 to 12 mm-hmm. hours before that as well.
Yeah.
So you already have nothing in you. Then you have this weird sugar hit and your body reacts really strangely to it. And I was sitting in the doctor's waiting room and I just span out, like I was really dizzy and stuff. So you just tell them that you're going to faint.
Yeah. Because
they don't want a pregnant lady
passed out in,
yeah, in the doctor. And they'll just give you a bed.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That, yeah. So I did that within 5 minutes and they just gave me a room with a bed and I just laid down for 2 hours and it was really easy.
Well, I had
that'd be my big tip. Even if you don't feel faint, just do it.
We went to see a doctor this morning because just to chat through the current state of affairs, and she told me because of coronavirus, she didn't want me sitting in the waiting room for that time.
Yeah.
So just to go and come back in an hour and tell them that's what you're doing.
The doctors is like around the corner from Hannah's parents.
So brilliant.
Five-minute walk.
We'll just go and lay down.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, that's one massive benefit.
Yeah.
This pandemic. Yeah. Yeah. That's great.
I've got to see
what is that thing of, like, we're sort of, you know, should probably explain that we are currently in talks about what happens if we are stranded here.
Yeah. So today Qantas have cancelled international flights starting late March, which is sort of next week, through to the end of May. So if we sort of can't get on a flight in the next week or so, it likely means we're going to be having our baby in Australia, because the end of May is, I think I'll be 37 weeks pregnant, which is too late to do a long haul flight.
Yeah.
So we booked a doctor's appointment this morning just to kind of check in and go, hey,
we might have a baby. Yeah,
we're having a baby and now it might be in this country. And so for me and Carl talking through it, because we're basically in a system in London, it feels like a real change of course to...
Absolutely. I'd be very upset.
Be over
The plan is we're speaking to Qantas today, we're waiting for a call back because obviously the lines are jammed. And the call back, the idea is we see if they can
cry.
Get us... Cry, tell them you're going to faint.
You cry, Carl.
I can cry. And then hopefully they can get us on a flight in the next 3 or 4 days or 5 days, whatever, to get back to London so we can get back to business as usual with the baby. Mm.
Yeah.
But we also now have started the contingency plan.
Yeah.
So
we're being very smart about it.
Being referred to a hospital here and, you know, it's like you said, Carl felt very reassured from that appointment this morning. I mean, I'm like... If I was going to have a baby somewhere else in the world, obviously it'd be Australia because I've got family here.
Well, we're very lucky that we're both, you know, you've got dual citizenship.
Yeah.
There'll be a slight issue probably. I'd have to extend my visa to, if they let me, to like stay for the everything. And you know, but actually we're very privileged that either country that we are in, we can have a baby come in a good health system.
Yeah.
But I think we knew that as well coming out here, because the point of being in Australia is we were here for the Melbourne Comedy Festival, which got cancelled because all gatherings over 500 people, blah, 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 are cancelled. So there's no festival. I don't know if we would have gone to a different country for this amount of time.
No, I don't think
you would have.
No.
Like, would you, like, I'm thinking about what the worst place would be. Like, you wouldn't want to be in the US.
No.
Absolutely not.
You know? And I don't think you would put yourself in that situation.
No. We wouldn't. No. The only reason we came here is we timed it. Like, we were like...
And you got family here.
Family. Yeah. It would give a nice little chance for Hannah to see the family. Then we'll get
see
back...
See my friends while I'm preggers.
Yeah. Get back 6 weeks. Everything was due to finish and we'd get back 6 weeks before the baby's due. That 6 weeks would be spent getting the house ready.
Chilling.
Everything was sort of timed to perfection, and then the coronavirus happened. So now
you guys were so irresponsible not to think about the possibility of a global pandemic.
Yeah.
But saying that, considering the gravitas of everything and the fact that we have got a baby on the way, I think we're still pretty taking it with a sort of in a good manner of like, let's just keep seeing what happens as it.
And also like. I was saying to you just briefly before, like, so many people have reached out to me and been like, oh, how are you coping with this? This must be really hard with a baby. But it's just been such a blessing to have a distraction and have something to focus on. You'll be the same. Like, it'll just be, you'll be like, what pandemic? I'm having a baby.
Yeah. It's that weird thing, though. There's that one part in my head, because we're staying at my parents' house. Like, having a baby living with my parents feels weird.
Yeah.
I could feel like a teenager.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you're like, you're a teen mom.
Yeah. I feel totally like a teen mom.
Oh, imagine if I get booted out because of the visa, that'd be the
really
worst.
A teen mom.
Yeah, with some runaway dad. got her up the duff.
Is it worth even having you on the birth certificate?
Skip the country.
Father, unknown. Get out of here. And then it's also, my mum just said to me this morning, she's like, I've got a friend who's got a cot and she's got a changing mat. And my head went, oh, fucking hell, we have to do all that stuff here. Yeah, like, yeah. That's so
but
part
you,
of the
you don't
getting
need,
back to London.
You won't need that much stuff. No. You don't need that much at the beginning, mm. I don't think. And you'll just, you will get donated stuff, I think, as well.
Yeah. Like the things you gave us. We've got some
nice little
clothes.
Yeah, I gave
you some
little clothes.
Which is exciting to take back. Yeah. Now, we've been in touch over the last few months and since you've become a mommy.
A mom.
One thing that we've kind of been saving up birth story. Yeah. Like we haven't talked about your birth story yet.
I had a real fucker.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've been listening to your podcast and I've heard a few other people that have had fuckers as well. Yes. And I don't know if mine's worse, but I've got a couple of good tidbits.
It'd be interesting as well, just in terms of the Australian, where the Australian system is different.
I can give you an insight into that as
well. Yeah, we need to know it just in case.
Yeah.
So talk to me.
Well, it was a Monday morning and it was 2 days before my due date. I was due on the Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And so we'd just been hanging around for ages. And do you know anything about mucus plugs?
Yes, Bryony told us
about mucus plugs.
Learned about that in 17 weeks ago,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
which is just the most disgustingly named thing.
It's like a snot that comes out.
It's a massive snot that comes out. But some people get a mucus plug that comes out and some people don't.
Yeah.
A couple of friends of mine have said that they were sad that they didn't have the mucus plug experience.
Yeah.
But Dan had to go out in the morning for a couple of hours and was sort of on alert kind of thing. He was like, just text me if anything happens, right? So I just sent him the emoji of like a plug and just wrote plug because it came out.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, I've got to get this sorted, I've got to get that. And I was like racing around the house, I've got to get everything sorted.
So is that what that normally is, the precursor to?
It just says stuff's happening.
Yes.
You know, things are moving. But I thought, I'm in labour. Like, I have to call the hospital straight away, you know. And little did I know it was going to be a while.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any symptoms. But over the course of the day, I started to get, like, period-type pains. But they weren't in intervals. It was just, like, just this weird vibe and it was the first night that Australian Survivor was starting, so I had a couple of friends over to watch the premiere of Australian Survivor. Massive Survivor fan. And then we went to bed, and at about 1:15 I woke up and it was more of a defined contraction. And so then I got up, and there's a really good app as well that you should get where you can time your contractions. Where you just have to press a button when it starts and then press a button when it stops.
Write it down.
Because you know how they say, like, you should time your contractions?
Yeah.
And so I don't know if it's the same in London, but in Australia they want you to labour as much as you can at home.
Yeah,
I think they that's say the same. It's for your own comfort, but I really think they just don't want you there.
Taking up a bed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they give you this whole spin about, you know, you're going to be way more comfortable at home. Yeah. But really, at home, you've got your couch and all your things, but you've got a lot of uncertainty and fear as well, and not knowing. And so I called the hospital a couple of times saying, like, oh, my contractions are 3-4 minutes apart, and they're like, they need to be 2 to 3 minutes apart. And I was like, ugh. And it took ages. And so it actually took until 1 o'clock the next day until they were
PM.
Really, until they were coming more fast and thick. And I was booked in at Monash Medical Centre, which is about 10-15 minutes away from here. And so we called them, we said they're coming much faster now, and I was in agony. Like, I was just like,
that's what I was about to say. Like, when you, so through that night, was it just constant, was there any sleep, or was there any?
No, I didn't sleep, but there was a point where Dan slept for the first few hours, and then I got him up, and I had a bath, and while I was having a bath, he slept in the hallway, just slept on the ground in the hallway. You just can't sleep through them. They're too painful.
Yes.
And it just does get progressively more painful. And, you know, it's just really weird because for me it was a pain. Like, you can't – you'd be in this boat now. Mm-hmm. You can't imagine what the pain is going to be. Like, there's nothing – you just don't know. And also the pain's different for everybody as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, hello you. My name's Tom Price.
Hello, I'm Dave Cribb.
You should come and join us. Every day we do a podcast called Cabin Fever, where we talk to loads of comedians who've had to cancel everything else in their lives, so they come on our podcast instead, don't they, Dave?
Yeah, it's an isolation podcast.
Dave, were you yawning at the start of that sentence then? Was it just a little yawn?
Yeah, it's basically the Great Big Owl isolation podcast. We'll have people on from all our podcasts, from your Rule of Threes, your Brian and Rogers, your Musicals, your Bitchins. If you like any of our podcasts, if you like any of those people, chances are they'll be logging onto the Zoom call and just chatting, because let's face it, they got nothing else to do.
Also, there'll be a quiz on the bill. All right, see you soon. Lots of love.
Cabin FE83709. Oh, 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 that's our Twitter name.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And it's just that weird thing, and this might not happen to you, but I thought when I was here and calling the hospital to say we're coming in, I thought that was the most pain I would be in. Like,
yeah.
These are very strong, very fast-coming contractions. I'm in labour.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we called...
did you have any pain relief? That we've been told about these, like, electron...
TENS machine. Yes. I had a TENS machine that a friend lent me. I didn't find it did that much, but I don't think I had a very good one either. So you should look into it. I think Chemist Warehouse sell them for specifically for labour.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of warmth, like a lot of heat on my back and bath and that kind of thing was good. And just sort of sat and breathed, and I'd read a few books about breathing and meditation and stuff like that. And they definitely work for the earlier stages, like visualizations and stuff like that. And Dan did a few visualizations, like, you know, stuff like walking me down the street, like these are the things you're seeing as we walk down to the shops, just to get my mind off what you're physically feeling in your body.
Did you do hypnobirthing?
No, I didn't do hypnobirthing. I just got lazy towards the end of my pregnancy, and people recommended it to me, and then I just never got around to it.
I think I've started reading book, and it's all that kind of stuff. As far as, like, I've started reading the book, I'm not all the way through, but it's about breathing and visualisation.
And it's like the basic principles of meditation.
Yeah.
Like to take your mind off a specific pain by distracting it with something else.
Yeah.
Like, it's not about the mind going still. It's about the mind
focusing intently on your breath. And you can just, meditation is.
Yeah,
really.
So I was doing this thing where I would hold my... When I had a contraction, I was holding my hands out in front of me, sort of... And this was just something I came up with myself. I think that's the best way to do it. Like, just do what works for you. Holding my hands out in front of me like I was sort of holding a ball... And then as the contraction sort of peaked, I would breathe and my hands would go out like the ball was getting bigger.
Yeah.
And I would just visualize my cervix stretching and opening. And I found that really therapeutic.
Yeah.
So we called the hospital and they said, we're full, so you can't come here. They said,
And was that you going into a labor ward there or a birth center or how
yeah,
does
so
it work?
In Australia, you can have private health cover through your insurance, but I have private health insurance, but I didn't have pregnancy cover.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have pregnancy cover, there's a 1 year waiting period as well. So a lot of people might get pregnancy cover, but then get pregnant and you have to go public. So I was a public patient, and I can't really fault the public system for maternity care in Australia. Like, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
I got really well looked after. All my appointments and everything were really, really great. I just didn't have a obstetrician that was my doctor.
But yeah.
I had a fairly straightforward pregnancy, so I didn't really need it. But I did something called shared care, where you have a GP that is your choice, so your maternal care GP.
That's what she told us this morning.
Yeah.
And you do half of your appointments with her or him.
Yeah.
And then half at the hospital with the midwives at the hospital. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that worked really well because towards the end of the pregnancy, I'd have like 1 week where I would go to the hospital for an appointment, 1 week with the GP and going and seeing her. And it's just a nice balance of, I found that the GP was a little bit more focused on me and my health and a little bit more holistic in that way.
Yeah.
Whereas the hospital is a bit more just focusing on making sure that your baby is healthy.
Yeah.
Because I was public, I got referred to a hospital. So you've been, if you have your baby here, you get referred to a hospital. So I was referred to Monash Medical Centre. And so we had our baby classes there and got shown the birth suite and the ward and everything. So it's not really, I don't think they have birth centres here in Australia.
Yeah, what's the birth suite?
So a birth suite is a part of the hospital where you give birth.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's basically next to the maternity ward.
Mm-hmm.
So you go and you have your baby in a nice room on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards you get wheeled around to the ward.
So, that would be sort of birth
center. Is it a nice, normal hospital room or does it have a bath and a double bed and things?
Not a double bed. Mm. So with the public system, you have a birth suite that you have the baby in, that you labour in, and it's a nice room. You're not with anybody else. It's nice and dark. You can bring things from home and that kind of stuff. Then after you've had the baby, after a few hours, they wheel you round to the maternity ward.
Yeah.
And that's where it's a little bit shit.
Yeah, yeah.
With so the public system. So like 6 to 8 people? How many people
Four
are
Four people at Monash.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, because Monash said they were full, I had to go to Dandenong Hospital.
Yeah.
Which was further away. And in the end, by the time I'll tell the story of having the baby, but in the end they only had 2 people per room. Yeah. And because they're not a main hospital, they're actually incredibly quiet and I had a room to myself. So I lucked out in a way because that was the only part of being public that I really didn't like was being in a ward with other people.
Yeah.
Because it's just like you've had this baby and you have the baby in the room with you.
Yeah.
Like what the fuck do I do with this baby? That's what I heard
when I went to this home birth class. The woman who she'd had 2 children in the labour ward and 1 at home. And she just said with the labour ward, once you're in there, it's just so busy. There's visitors coming for everybody. Everyone in there has a new baby.
Yeah, and
so
it's you all just can't like rest. Curtained off, like in this little... And the dad has to go home at night time.
Yeah.
Like, it's just... That's the only part that I was like, no, I wish if I could have anything with the private system, what I would want.
Yeah, yeah.
Because with some private cover, you actually get put up in the Grand Hyatt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got a friend who had that.
Yeah, holy so you go. Moly. Yeah, you go. The Grand Hyatt has a level.
Yeah.
Or which is a fancy hotel in the CBD of Melbourne.
Right.
Has a whole level just for the new mothers with private healthcare.
Oh, God.
So they have their baby, and then they get taken to a hotel, a swish hotel.
Yeah, like 5-star.
For a few days.
If
and
we
then
get
they
stranded
have,
here, can we have a whip round
of listeners? Exactly, let's do a GoFundMe.
Put us up in the Grand Hyatt.
And they have midwives and nurses there with you.
I'm pretty sure champagne, like I think you get a bottle of champagne.
Oh, this sounds like the best.
It looks so cushy, like crazy cushy. But
so what, so when you got told it was full, and did they just say, go to Dandenong?
They said, well, call Dandenong Hospital and see if they've got room for you. And so in that 5 minutes that they were checking, I had a little cry.
Yeah.
And I was a bit upset just because I was just
change
kind of stressed by that point. And so I really sympathise with you with your change of plans because... It's just you get your mind set on something. And I think with something like birth, you picture it. Like you constantly try and picture what it's going to be like. And then when that gets thrown on its head. But it couldn't have – it ended up being a blessing because we got such good care there. Yeah. Like when we ended up at Dandenong Hospital, the midwife that brought us in, she was like, I know it's really daggy here because it's like this really daggy old hospital in a very low socioeconomic area
I've got family in Dandenong.
Melbourne.
I know what it's like.
And she's like, I know it's pretty daggy here, but we're really good. And I was like, oh, they were just fantastic from the beginning. Like the midwives there were just so beautiful. And so we arrived there at, say, 2 o'clock. And the midwife was like, now, you're pretty early. And I was like, what the fuck? Because I've been doing it for like 12 hours already and I was in so much pain. She's like, you're pretty early. And because what had happened was, which is interesting, through the journey of travelling to the hospital and getting into the hospital, my contractions had slowed way down.
And your cervix would have...
And I was like, I swear I was having them at home. And she was like, no, I believe you. She said, what happens is in the journey to get to the hospital, your body feels unsafe.
Yeah.
Because you know that you're not in a place that you can give birth, so your contractions stop.
Oh.
So it halts, and she said then it takes a few hours for you to realise that you're in a safe place for you to have your baby, and then the contractions will start again.
Wow.
And so I was there for maybe half an hour, and then this doctor comes in, this, like, woman that was, like, rough as guts, and... She's like, I'm the doctor in charge. She goes, you are in very early labour. And I was just, she just kept saying, you are very early. Like, can you please stop telling me that it's very early labour? Yeah. She's like, I think you need to go home. And I was just like, I can't go home. Yeah. Like, the walk from the car alone was excruciating. Like, you can't send me home. She's like, we'll give you Panadine Fort. And I was like, no, you can't send me home. And then she left the room and I heard her saying to another midwife, she's in incredibly early labour. I was like, what the fuck?
And
then,
fuck off.
Yeah, fuck off. And then she came back in, she was like, this could be 5 days. She goes, sometimes this is 5 days. And I like burst into tears again, the crying works.
Yeah.
I started crying and she was there, the midwife was there. I was like, I can't do it, I can't go home. And she broke. She was like, all right, we'll keep you here. And then she said that her name was Trace.
Yes, please.
She said that her name was Trace and that she's had 8 kids. So she knows what she's talking about. She said, just count to 30. Just count to 30 each contraction. So then that was my next thing that I did for a while. Anyway, it got worse and worse and worse. The labour itself ended up being 29 hours.
Ooh, yeah.
And he was posterior as well. So that means that his back... The baby's back should sort of be facing outwards, like his spine should be facing outwards
Your
with his
belly
head
button.
Down.
Yeah.
Yeah, but his spine was along my spine.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And that gives you excruciating back pain, apparently. So that was why my pain was perceived as being worse. Like pain is just different for everybody anyway.
Yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
For me, I just could never imagine pain like that.
Yeah.
And it just, got worse and worse. And the really annoying thing is, because you have to be 10 centimetres dilated, your cervix, and they kept saying, we'll check your cervix every 4 hours to see. But 4 hours just felt like an eternity.
Yeah,
I was like, can we just check it every 30 minutes? Like, I don't care.
I'll
I don't
check
care
it.
That you're going
Give
up
it a ruler.
There. Just keep checking. Like, I need to know that it's progressing. The other thing was that... I had grand plans for not being nude as well.
Granddaddy Shane plans.
Yeah, granddaddy Shane plans.
Granddaddy cool plans.
Because I'm very modest with my nudity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a very nude person. And so I had a robe and then I had like a black crop top and black briefs. And I thought I'll just have the robe wrapped around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I won't take the bra off at any point. When the baby is ready to come out, I'll just pop my undies off and I'll pop them back on again. But it's amazing how quickly you just don't give a shit. So at one point they're like, we think you should have a bath because that'll be really good for the pain. And I was on the gas as well. The gas was great. I had the gas the whole way through. And they said, the gas, you can have the gas in the bath, but the bath is in a different room, so you've got to walk down the corridor to get there.
Yeah.
So they filled up the bath and I went down there and I took off the robe, took off the bra and the undies, I got naked. And I was like, ooh, I'm naked and there's a woman in here. The midwife in here with me and my husband, and it's just really weird. But you just get used to it. And so I was in the bath for a couple of hours and then I was like, I want to get out of the bath.
Did the bath help? Just out of
the bath was great.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was really nice. It was never that I was going to give birth in the bath. It was just to chill out for a while.
But you can? People can? Or is that...
Not in that hospital.
Right.
But at Monash they had one that you could,
yeah.
I think. We had the radio on as well. So at one point Electric Dream was playing. Together I was like, this is so surreal and weird. It was like Gold 104, which is the oldies station. So I was ready to get out of the bath and I was in so much pain. I was like, I'm not putting my bra and undies back on. Like, that's...
No.
I can't
that's
do
the
it.
Old, that's the old Laura.
That's the old Laura. I've left her behind in the bath. That water is flowing down the park. Yeah. So I was like, I'll stay naked and I'll just drape the robe over me. Yeah. Like, not even do the robe up. Yeah. I'll just drape the robe over me, right? So it's this, like, fully pregnant, you know, naked body. I was having contractions. They sort of patted me dry and then we had to walk back down the corridor and I was like, it's a birthing suite, like, it's just going to be midwives in here. I don't give a shit anymore. I'll just be naked, like, who cares? So we had to walk back down the corridor to get back into my room.
Yeah.
And in the corridor standing was a full family.
Oh my God.
A Muslim family.
Yeah.
So quite modest.
With more modest than old Laura.
Yeah. With three young boys just backed up against the wall. And I was completely nude in front of them. And I just was like groaning. And Dan looked at them. The boys just had their mouths open. And Dan looked at them and just went, g'day, lads.
Yeah.
How's it going? Like, just walked past them. So that was the point that I left my modesty behind. Yeah. So if you're, I've heard you talk on the podcast about how you're worried about doing a poo.
I think I'm going to do a poo.
Nudity, Hannah, is absolutely fine.
Really. Yeah. Also, by that point, I had a dedicated person to snap off the poo.
He had a poo snapper.
Yeah.
Oh, what?
Who? Dan?
No. Dan stayed up the head end the whole time because he gets a bit woozy. So, went on and...
A dedicated poo snapper, or did they have other jobs to do as well?
I think their only job was to snap the
poo. Oh, imagine getting that shit.
Because I remember there was a lot of thoughts going through my mind, but I remember thinking, I think that person's only sitting here snapping off the poo. Oh, I think that's all she's doing. Like, do they have midwife shifts?
Yeah.
That say, like, or if you do something, poo snapping shift today.
Yeah. If you upset everyone, you've done something wrong. You're like, right, you've got poo snapping today.
They didn't bake cakes for the team.
But so it just advanced, and then my water hadn't broken, and then all of a sudden it broke. And I had meconium, which is when the baby does a poo.
Beep, boop, beep, boop,
and
beep,
that means that it's a bit bad. Yeah. So they put the heart monitor stuff on to listen. And then it just kind of got, his heart rate got sort of worse and worse.
Mm.
But I was in so much pain. I thought I would be fully clothed. And I also thought that I wouldn't make any noise. Yes. Like, I just was very prepared to just be silent and
very
still
dignified,
and dignified. I didn't want to be a cow, but I was like a cow, and I was a lion, and I was like all these other animals, and I was just like roaring. And at one point the senior midwife came in, her name was Wendy, and she just like was this older woman. She's put her glasses down to the end of her nose and she came right up in my face, because you can only, because you have your eyes closed so much because you're in so much pain, you just sort of open them and find someone in your face. She was just like, honey, you need to stop screaming because you're going to lose your voice, all right? She was just calm and I grabbed her hand. anyway, so you're screaming on all fours, all that kind of jazz. And then all of a sudden they just decided that the heart rate had dropped too much, so then they pressed the emergency button. Mm. And I was sort of a bit out of it for all of this, so this is more stuff that Dan remembers and has told me. And then as soon as they hit that, all the lights went up. It was like bright fluorescent light. They brought in all these trolleys. There was about 10 doctors and nurses and stuff that came in. I'm like, all right, Laura. They're like so calm, chill. I'm like, all right, Laura, your baby's heart rate's dropping quite a bit, so we're just going to move things along a little bit quicker and get him out. And they like flipped me over, put me in the stirrups, so legs right up, just like everything just like bare open. And so then for the next half hour, they got me to push, which just felt really like impossible.
Because mm-hmm. You were tired, or because it was
just exhausted. Yeah. You're just so exhausted and just so emotional. Like I just had so many breakdowns where I just didn't think I could do it. The other weird thing that happens is that you forget that you're having a baby. Like you forget that that's what you're there to do. You just think it's something else that's happening.
You're just in this thing.
And that's why they keep telling you, you're going to have your baby, you're going to have your baby, because you do literally forget that you're having your baby.
that makes sense.
I'm just in the middle of this fucked situation. Yeah. And so then over the course of that half hour, I pushed, but they also did an episiotomy, which is where they cut you. So they put like needles in to numb it. They also inserted a catheter to release my bladder so that there would be more room. And then they did the sucky thing, the vacuum thing. Yeah. And that failed a couple of times. So he ended up, when he came out, he had a big bruise on the top of his head and a scab, like skin that had ripped off. Because they pull on it, and when it pops off, Dan said the doctor was pulling it and it popped off and blood went all over her face.
Oh, wow.
And he thought that the baby's head had come off.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I can imagine.
He thought the baby's head had come off. Jesus. Blood just went, just like spurted. She had goggles on. Her. Yeah. I'll never forget her face. She had goggles on, the blood like spurted in her face. And so that failed. So then they got the forceps, the big old forceps out.
And
then they delivered him. And popped him on my chest.
And what was that moment like when he finally just, he's out?
It was just like, it was a really lovely moment.
Yeah.
And he didn't breathe straight away, so they had to do the thing where they rub his chest and get him breathing. But as the mother and having been in so much pain, and actually you're the one in the room that is the least in the know about what's happening because you're so self-focused, you're the one that actually is the most oblivious to the situation. Yeah. So I had no idea that it was a bit of an emergency. Dan was the one that was so well aware and was like crying.
He was crying
like a maniac because he thought his baby's head had been
popped off and then not breathing.
My word.
So he was just bawling. I didn't cry once. I just didn't cry. So I just felt euphoric. I just felt euphoric and like really good. But then they like, so then you have your baby on you for like 2 hours. They don't move the baby. They just keep it on you because they say that time is really important for the skin to skin. So they don't weigh them or anything.
Does that is the cord chopped off?
They chopped off like a longer part of it.
Yeah.
And then they waited. And then when they weighed him like a couple of hours later, then they chopped it off and tied it stuff. They just clamped it. But then, so you're sitting there with your baby, and then for the next half hour, they're putting stitches in you and stitching you up, and they're putting stuff up your bum, like Nurofen up your bum and stuff like that.
Are you still in stirrups?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
But you just don't give a shit. You just don't care.
Were you still very anaesthetized?
Yeah, but it was hurting, and you have to give birth to the placenta.
But you didn't, you didn't have an epidural?
No. That was the other thing, was that I had researched all the pain relief, and I decided that, like, I was open to an epidural. I was like, I'll just see how it goes, and I'll just ask for one if I'm not coping. And I didn't cope with the pain whatsoever. But the problem was, because I had told myself that I would just ask for it when I was ready, by the time I was ready for it, I was in too much pain that I had lost all my faculties to be able to actually ask for it. So I couldn't – and they want you to actually ask for it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think also in Australia they're a little bit more hesitant about epidurals than in the UK as well. I think they don't necessarily suggest it to you. You have to to specifically ask for it or yell for it.
Mm. Right.
But I would do things like, oh, I think maybe I should have an epidural, like that. And they'd be like, what about you have these water injections in your back? All right, I'll just have that. Like it was, like I was just kind of out of it that I couldn't specifically ask for it. Yeah. So it just, I never got it, even though I think I should have had it. And I'll, if I ever have a baby again, I'll 100% be going in and having it immediately.
Yeah.
I can't go through that pain again.
Yeah.
Ever. But also I think that, like, I think that what happened was fairly standard for them.
Yeah.
But, like, it doesn't mean that every woman's going to have that experience either.
No, of course.
You know?
That's what we learned on seemingly on this, is how different everyone is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How had you imagined your, like, How had you imagined your birth?
I think I'd imagined that I would handle it much better. Like I had a supreme confidence in myself because I'm a calm person, so I don't get hysterical or upset very easily. And so I thought that I was, and I have practiced meditation before. I know how to do it. So I just thought that I would nail it in terms of the pain management, but I just couldn't. Like there was a lot of screaming, a lot of crying. And it was, I think what was horrible for me was that it was a bit scary.
I guess that also how that out of control is pain it felt. Management, isn't it? Like,
yeah, exactly. I was doing what I had to do at the time
to get through it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just grieving.
Yeah.
And labour and
But I have had some flashbacks after I had him in the first 2 weeks, where I was crying a lot and having flashbacks to it. So I got a mental health care plan.
Yeah.
And I've just started seeing a psychologist to deal with my birth trauma.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I went to her yesterday and was like, what birth? I need to talk about the global pandemic. And she was like, we'll talk about the global pandemic in time, but let's deal with your birth first. Yeah.
And did that feel useful to be doing that?
Well, I'm going back tomorrow. On Saturday. It's Thursday, so I'm going back on Saturday, and she's going to do some hypnosis-type exercises with me about getting the trauma memory stored back in my normal memory bank.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, so that I don't have these weird flashbacks to it.
Yeah, I guess because that's one of the things I think we've kind of garnered the information from people is that you do sort of forget about it, that that's what happens.
Yeah.
And that's why people then are able to kind of...
to do it again.
Move on. And that gets erased a bit. But I guess it doesn't... always that then for some people it's
and it's also still very
recent, 6 weeks ago still.
Exactly I'll be able to process it in time for sure
but it's good that you're doing something about it so
I'm
quickly
very proactive with mental
health. Because I think a lot of people will probably just think
I've
it'll be fine, it'll pass, and then in 6 months time they're still having these terrible thoughts.
I've heard of people that they don't process it and then a year later they're screwed up about it because they've just sort of not realized the impact that it's had on them. But I find I have triggers with it, so because I had an episiotomy, it's been more of a physical recovery for the last 6 weeks.
Yes.
So on days that I don't feel that well, I find that I feel more emotional about the birth, whereas on days where I feel fit and healthy, like today I'm feeling pretty great, you just don't think about it. I think it's also that just that healing time that you need to get back to
that you still can, like you've got a physical,
I think so.
Feel physical pain.
She described it as a trigger.
Yeah.
Like if someone's in a car accident, say, and they have post-traumatic stress from that, maybe getting back in a car can be a trigger.
Yeah.
So in the same way, this is a bit of a trigger.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all very interesting. But
it's been going, you were saying that little Daniel Shane. He's been sleeping all right, and it's been pretty good since he's around.
Yeah. And I, because you've been reading lots of books, Carl.
Yes.
I've been reading a book there called The Discontented Little Baby.
Yeah.
And it talks about babies and their sympathetic nervous systems.
Mm.
And that...
write it down, please, Hannah. Add it to my reading list.
Well, if you stay in Australia, you can just borrow it after me. And that, like, when a baby cries, particularly when they're crying because they're hungry, it's because it's their fight or flight sympathetic nervous system kicking in. Because for a baby, if they don't get food, they think they're going to die.
Yeah.
So they need food.
Me too.
They need. Exactly. I can sympathize.
Yeah.
They think they're going to die, so they need it. And so that's why their crying is so dramatic and so intense, and why nothing can calm them down is because they need to get that food or else they're going to not live. So it's like their survival techniques. And basically it's about sort of – it's a counter-argument to the just let them cry it out thing.
Yeah.
So, and it's that thing of the less you have a crying baby – the less you'll have a crying baby in a way. The less your baby cries, the less you're going to have a crying baby. Because just try and keep them as calm as possible and all about picking up on cues before they get to the real crying place, because the crying is one of the last cues that they give you.
Yeah, right.
So, like, things like a yawn, it's like, get them to sleep right now.
Yeah, because
that's what he's telling me he needs. And, like, you were here before he'd had a sleep and then he woke up. It was like, give him a moment to have a little look around and a sit. And then the moment it looked like he was going to start cracking it, get him on the boob and feed him. And then I've just found that that's helped with him in particular. He's a really chilled out baby. And, like, there's still times where he cries for, like, 10 minutes and we don't know what to do. But we don't have those, like, long stretches of just insane crying.
Yeah. Well, he's in the next door room right now, completely silent for this whole time.
Yeah. But I think that's... I think that's worked for us, but also our baby doesn't have things like, so far he hasn't had colic or reflux or like digestive problems where it's really uncomfortable for them, because I think then it's like they're going to cry no matter what. But I found also you guys will be fine, because I just think calm parents, like, just, I've just tried to make it my main job to be calm.
Yeah.
Because I really think they pick up on the vibe.
But that was even today, this morning, when I woke up and I was a bit like, oh, I'm a bit sad about, you know, feeling sick still. Feeling sick and like...
potentially stranded.
Not knowing where we're going to be. And Carl was just like, but you have to be happy because of the baby. And that's true. Like, I have been the whole way through, and surely that she will pick up on something, even in this that subtle mood difference.
Yeah. But it's also kind of nice that you have to make yourself calm, because, like, it's a better state of mind to try and be in. So even if you didn't have a baby, like, it's just nice that the baby is the impetus to make me a calmer person and to be, like, proactive with not being too anxious.
And panic doesn't make you function better, you know what I mean? That thing of with a new baby when they're crying, and if you go into panic stations, you're not going to be thinking straight to...
Mm.
You know, so I suppose it's...
Because they're in a panic.
Exactly. You don't want everyone in a panic.
Yeah. The hardest thing is, though, it is really hard watching your baby cry, because their face is... It does break your heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds cliche, but it really does. But that's all part of the evolution thing as well, and the survival is to... Are we going over time?
No. You caught me. I was just letting Hannah know the time of recording.
No. This is when he gives me, and I get all... Oh, God, I don't know what...
I actually gave you a nod about 15 minutes ago.
Not 15 minutes ago, no way.
It's a nice chat.
So interesting.
Yeah, I know, it's great.
And now, just quickly, you're sitting... I noticed immediately when we came in here, I was like, oh, is that your nursing chair?
Yes.
Some of your bits and pieces look quite good. Now, you said you weren't really that into the nursing chair.
Yeah, but I did nurse him before.
Yeah.
In
double pillows on your lap.
In this chair. This is a classic IKEA rocking chair.
Yeah, it's great.
I think it might be called a Pons or something. I think that's the product name, maybe something like that. I can't recommend a rocking chair higher. It's not necessarily for nursing, but for nursing him back to sleep.
It really
works. Like when I wrap him up and he's had a feed, just rocking back and forward helps.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a rocking chair.
Rocking chair, get it on the list.
Once you get back to London.
Yeah.
And your little changing table, I noticed when I came in.
Yeah, changing table has been really handy as well.
Like, we're in your living room, and obviously there's a little presence of little baby Daniel Shane, but it's not like...
We didn't want too much crowded. Crap. No, we didn't want too much crap.
Feels very integrated into your space.
Yeah, well, we only live in a small apartment.
So yeah, but it feels spacious and nice, doesn't it?
Yeah, we didn't want too much shit.
Your Swiss cheese plant is somehow...
It's excellent.
We've
got
one. It's
going to fall over at some point. It's massive.
So crazy.
But whereas yours has just grown loads of cool leaves, ours has grown five ones that are about...
I know, I've seen your cheese.
There's more. They're coming and coming and coming.
Yeah. I kind of wish I had one with the big leaves.
Yeah.
Until you have a toddler and then...
Yeah.
Then leaves will be getting it.
Was there anything...
I don't think so.
You'll be chatting to Big Dan.
I've been chatting to him. I've been
getting some Big Daddy advice.
Yeah, we had a good chat when we were in Adelaide about all the things. It's good. I'm getting some good tips off it.
Yeah.
You'd be a good dad.
It's nice to be, you know, that little bit behind. Like, we're not that far away from each other in terms of...
But then it's nice to be that little bit ahead as well.
Yeah.
Because I was like, it's nice to look back and be like, oh, I was feeling exactly the same or like, I don't know. It's just a really nice experience to share. The other nice thing,
go.
But the other nice thing that's happened is that when you have a baby, all of these other mothers just come out of the woodwork and do the nicest things for you, like just send the nicest text messages or whatever. And it's like, it's that real cliche, I hate it, but it's like you've joined the mother's club. Like, I hate that saying, it's icky. And like, before I had a baby, I was like, ugh, like, it's gross. And like, my friends that don't have babies are exactly the same as my friends that do, like, there's no difference. But there's something very nice. You'll hear from people that you haven't heard from for years and years, and like be sent little things from people that are thinking of you, or it's such a nice thing. Like, and people that maybe distant acquaintances will get in touch with you.
Yeah.
And it's just really warming and nice and lovely.
That's cool.
So you can look forward to that as well.
You did say you had some questions for me. Did you have anything?
I just want to know, like, everything about how you're feeling and all that. Yeah.
All right. Well, we can talk about that afterwards, Carl.
Because you've probably been covering that in the podcast anyway.
Yeah.
So, Carl, you don't have to worry about the time.
Okay. I've got one bit of advice that I got given is that you should start roughing up your nipples.
Right.
Has anyone told you that?
No.
So, well, like, they've not told me
that. A bath, you should do it too.
I'd do it.
Why not? You've got
I'm actually genuinely, I'm not messing around. I've had very itchy nipples the last week. I don't know if it's sympathy nipple itch or something.
Maybe it's COVID-19.
I mean, yeah, there is probably there is a pandemic. I've probably got it.
Because the baby, like, I got given this advice and it helped a little bit.
Yeah.
But you could do, I wasn't as diligent. Just like to get a scourer, like from the bath, like for the shower, and just whenever you're in the shower, just like rub it over your nipples and just rough them up, because the baby massacres them so much that you want, like, because before now they're just like a part of your body that doesn't
do anything.
Yeah. You should also get them out in the sun a bit more, and just expose them and rough them up.
All right.
Yeah.
But okay, I will. Yeah. I will. I'll get a scour in the shower.
Yeah.
Bit of sandpaper.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Or just get Carl to bite down on them.
Bit of match. You could get some nipple scourers.
Yeah, Keith Chegg and nipple scourer.
There we go.
There you go.
And it's actually just a nail file.
Yeah.
just a
branded nail file.
A pumice stone.
Yeah. That's really good.
That's good tip.
You had a weird nipple dream the other night.
I had a dream that Hannah squeezed her boobs and milk, like, properly ejected out of both of them, like, across the room.
That happens.
Yeah, I've heard.
Yeah. So it's like you are a dairy cow. So you squeeze your boob and it does squirt across the room. Like, I squirted once over the coffee table.
So Hannah Gadsby had in her show this year in Douglas... There's a saint who got canonised when he had a dream of the Virgin Mary squirting her nipples in his face. And so there's paintings of this, like, this priest kind of kneeling down and the Virgin Mary just squirting her nipple, squirting her milk on him.
Wow.
And I was like, yep, that's just a sex dream, really. He became a saint from it.
That's kinky.
Yeah.
You will start to feel like a cow, though.
I love cows. They're my favourite animal.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
So I'm really happy about that.
And a sacred animal, too.
My favourite, the sacred.
Yeah.
I embrace the cow.
Yeah. Well, you'll become one.
All right. Well, thank you, Laura. That's been really great and really interesting. And particularly, like, those little things about the Australian healthcare system.
Yes. Yeah.
It's really useful.
Hopefully
right
you
now.
Don't have to deal with that. But I know, like, there's lots of people in Melbourne now that would be thrilled to have you stay and have your baby here.
Exactly.
Including your mum and your dad, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I mean, they're probably on the phone to Qantas saying don't change their flights.
Oh, absolutely.
They will be receiving a phone call from
they would be
no matter
over
how much they cry.
Yeah.
Do not listen to
Do
them.
Do not change
their
flights.
They're fake tears.
We started this thing. Okay, thank you.
Thank you
for talking to us today and for having us in your house.
Cheers.
And
stay safe and wash your hands.
Yeah. And Carl, the baby this week is the size of a butternut squash.
Yes, finally. I've been waiting for
That's
this
quite
week.
Quite large.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
big.
Butternut squash.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
GreatBigOwl.com. I'm Tilly Steele.
And I'm Helen Monk.
And this is Bitchin'.
I'm dyslexic.
Yeah, why do you read the Wikipedia page?
It's good to practice.
A podcast where every week we talk about a different person.
So how old was he when he first popped on the scene?
That's a great
question.
If
you say he was my age, I'm gonna fucking die.
And we veer wildly off track.
Pop that Prosec.
Available on all your podcast apps. That's not right. Just
can you not say in the advert?
Available on all your podcast platforms. Just search Bitchin' or Great Big Owl.
We'll see you there.
That was all right.